It is so good to be with you. My name is Tyler, and I'm our disciple-making pastor here on staff. And whether you're joining us here in Washington or at Vincent's in Princeton or even in our fireside room or online, it is so good to be with you on this holiday weekend. Today, we are getting ready to wrap up our sermon series called Functional Family. And I think we all desire to be a part of a functional family, yet that takes intentionality and work. And last week, Matt had us look at Psalm 127 and challenged us to build our families on the Lord and to trust God in the things that we can't control. Yet towards the end of that message, Matt said this. He said, "The target of parenting is to point our kids to become fully devoted followers of Christ." And today, I just want to take some time to go down that path, to help us evaluate, are we doing that? Do we do that well? And if that's the target, how often do we stop and ask ourselves, is that the direction that my family is going? Trust me, I get it. Life can feel busy and chaotic. This is my family on the screen. This is my wife, Anna, and our four kids. We've got four kids, four and under. So yeah, that's fun. My wife hasn't slept in 5 years. And so if you ever want to feel gracious to her, she is an amazing mom as we navigate this wild and chaotic world of parenting. Just a bunch of little kids all together. And so, but God has placed this tremendous privilege and honor onto our lives to steward the lives of these children, to point them in the direction of following after Jesus. And if you're a parent, God has given you that exact same call and responsibility. And so today we're going to be looking at a passage that I believe will help us answer the question. If that's the target, the target is that our pointing our kids to become fully devoted followers of Jesus, how do we hit it? How do we ensure that we're pointing our kids in that direction? And so today we're going to be in Deuteronomy 6. You can flip there on the Bible in front of you or around you. It's on page 145. And we're going to use this passage to answer three questions about pointing our kids to Jesus. One, what is the target? What is the true target that we're aiming at? Second is, how do we hit it? And finally, what's the trap that might prevent us from getting there? In this passage, Moses is addressing God's people as they are preparing to enter the promised land. Up until this point of their story of God's people, God has richly has promised them some things and then has provided them some things. God said, "I want to make you my people." And then God delivered his people from slavery, provided them food and water as they wandered through the wilderness. And now we hit a pivotal point in the people of God and their story. That another one of God's promises is getting ready to be fulfilled as they receive the promised land. And Moses says, "Hey, I have some things from God that you need to be mindful of, some things that you need to do as you set foot into the promised land, and the means by which you are called to accomplish them is the family." And here's what it says, starting in verse 1. "These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy a long life. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord your God of your ancestors promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." This passage is so rich and we're barely going to scratch the surface today. But to look at our first question, what does this passage say is the target of our families? Moses is putting this challenge before all of God's people, that they're getting ready to head into the promised land. And there's something in this passage that later became to be known as the greatest commandment. And it's what the target of our family is called to be. And you'll find that in verse 4 and 5. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. This part of the passage is the very center of the text. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. Now, this is the call. This is what's been placed before our families, that the primary thing that we are called to do is to love the Lord our God with all that we have. Not just our heart, not just our mind, not just our soul, and not just our strength, but all of them together. It says the way that's going to be accomplished is through your family. It's going to be passed from one generation to the next. Because you see, families, they pass along all sorts of things from generation to generation. Genetics, quirks, traditions, inheritance, and even our brokenness. But in this passage, Moses is saying, beyond all of that, the most important thing that you are meant to pass along from generation to generation is a love and devotion to God. Of all the things that we do in our houses, the ultimate aim is to cultivate a home where the love of God is fostered above all else. Not just becoming nice people, good students or good athletes, but a love for God above all else. See, the target is to help all generations in your family to come to love the Lord your God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength. It may sound simplistic or even assumed, but we are all prone to distraction. That we are accidentally just might drift into having other aims for our family. The thing that's of primary importance, the thing that matters most. And so if that's the aim, what's the trap that might prevent us from hitting the target? From the beginning of Scripture, all God's people had always been identified by two things, God's promises and God's providing. And God promised to make a people for himself. And God promised to make them into a mighty nation. And God promised to give them a land to dwell in. Then God provided. He provided a way out of slavery. He provided food and water in the wilderness. And he is getting ready to provide a land for his people. And we reach this critical moment in Deuteronomy 6 where this next promise is about to be provided. And right before they head into the promised land, Moses gives them this warning about the trap that will be in front of them as they settle in the promised land. Starting in verse 1, it says, "These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, so you may enjoy a long life. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord your God, the God of your ancestors, promised you." See, Moses is giving this warning to God's people. You, your children, and your grandchildren must fear the Lord as long as you live. And sometimes when we hear this phrase, fear of the Lord, our minds jump to this idea of being scared of God. And there's a part of that that's somewhat true, but it misses the entirety of what that phrase is actually driving at. And what it's more driving at is this idea of reverence or awe and wonder. Whenever you look at God, you go, oh my, look at who God is. So to fear the Lord is to admire God for who he truly is and see our need for him. You see, whenever we live in a fear of the Lord, we look to God and say, wow, look at how wonderful he is. He is our creator. He is our sustainer. Look at all the promises that he has provided. Look at how we need him. But then it also flips back on ourselves. And we say, wow, I need that God. I live in a need for that type of God in my life. See, because whenever we fear the Lord, it changes our view both of God, but also of ourselves. A.W. Tozer put it this way, "What comes to mind when we think about God is the most important thing about us." That whenever we think about who God is, that shapes the way that we live our entire lives. And what Moses was warning all of Israel is that, hey, you might be prone to forget who your God is. And that forgetfulness would leave them to lose their fearfulness. And once they lost their fearfulness, the only direction that they were going to go was a half-heartedness towards God. And you and I, we struggle from that exact same temptation and that exact same trap. That we can have that moment where we may become familiar with God, but we ultimately forget who he is and we lose our need for him. And we can just roll in and out of church on Sunday and go, yeah, I'll give God my hour on Sunday morning, but I'm going to live the rest of my life the way that I want to. Not really giving a thought to him. I don't dislike God. He just doesn't have any value towards me. Or I'm just going to leave God out of certain aspects of my life because I feel like I'm a better God than God in those areas. You see, that is the challenge that we face. And when that begins to happen, Moses is saying, beware. You are falling into the trap. You're losing your fear of the Lord. And when you lose your fear of the Lord, you will absolutely become half-hearted towards God. Your love for God moves from all your heart, mind, soul, and strength to something far less. And this is the trap that Moses is warning God's people, and it's a trap that we have to be mindful for in our families, is that our families will become half-hearted towards God. And as your pastor, I have to start here with just some bad news, okay? I promise we're going to end with good news, but for news to be good, sometimes it has to invade bad or dark places. So I have to start with some bad news that we can then step into the good news of Jesus with. So here's the bad news, church. In America, half-hearted Christianity is now normal Christianity. Half-hearted Christianity is now normal Christianity. That is the new norm in America. The church in America is stuck in spiritual and statistical decline. Now, Jesus is going to build his church. The church is thriving in other parts of the world. Do you want to know where the fastest growing churches are in the world? Iran and Afghanistan. Places that the church should not be growing. And you look at places like Asia and Latin America and Africa, and the church is growing. But here, where we are, it's stuck and it's declining and it's actually starting to die. And this organization called Barna, they love the church. And their goal is to give accurate data to the church to help them see what is truly going on in and around the culture. And so Barna has been following a group, just the millennials, that's people my age, mid-20s all the way up into mid-30s. And so this group of people who grew up in church, they've been following all the millennials that have grown up in church, running data on what has been happening to those people. They grew up in church. They grew up in Christian homes. That was the reality that they found themselves in. And so they have said, okay, now that they're in their mid-20s to early 30s, where have those people actually landed whenever it comes to faith? And they've got they've got a bucket over here they call ex-Christians. These are people who grew up in the church or Christian homes who are now adamantly against faith, often opposed to the things of Jesus. And then they have people in the fourth bucket that would be what they call resilient disciples, or what we would just call fully devoted followers of Christ, the goal and the aim of our households. And for someone to be a resilient disciple, four things have to be true of them. They have to attend worship monthly and involve somehow beyond Sunday morning. Two, they have to trust in the authority of the Bible, believing it to be God's word. They have to be committed to Jesus personally, affirmed that he was crucified and raised from the dead. And then ultimately, they have to see a desire to see the world. They want to see the world improve because of their faith in Jesus. So this is what a resilient disciple or a fully formed disciple looks like. What percentage of my generation do you think made it there? The answer is 10%. One in 10 of us made it. One in 10 of us actually made it. And the rest of us, if you look at this graph, will show where did the rest of us land? All these people who grew up in church, these are kids that grew up in church and in Christian homes. This is where they landed. 22% of them are now ex-Christians. You are twice as likely to become an ex-Christian growing up in a Christian home than becoming a fully devoted follower of Christ. 30% would be what they call spiritual nomads, which are people who would say, hey, I'm a Christian. Oh, where do you go to church? Oh, I've been to church in years. They're people who would say, identify as Christian, but have absolutely, it's because their family did it or something they did when they were a kid, or it's the thing that they most likely just identify with on a loose end. The other 38% are what they call habitual churchgoers. So these are people who would say, yeah, I'm a Christian, I go to church. But whenever they actually look at their lives beyond that, any of the marks of discipleship that Jesus would say, hey, you want to be my disciple? Here's the thing. There's zero markers. There's nothing. There's no historical Christian belief. There's no action. There's no spiritual practice that connects them to Jesus or others. There's nothing that they do outside of showing up for church that you would be able to say, oh yeah, they're a Christian. So this is where my generation has ended up in regards to things of faith. And, you know, there's a lot that's changed in the world that, you know, in my generation growing up, I'm the last generation, the last group of people that knew life pre-internet. I still remember whenever we got dial-up internet, and you prayed because you were praying, Lord, please don't let anybody call and knock me off. I have my ICQ I need to check, and I need to play Yahoo Pool at the speed of a snail, but we're going to do it. And, you know, iPhones didn't come into being until I was in high school. And what has shifted in the winds of culture over the last 30 to 40 years is people just kind of slowly drifted back to church. Even if their faith wasn't very strong, people just kind of ended up back at church. And with my generation, maybe the generation preceding it, is that trend has stopped. And now the cultural wind is going the other direction and is now pulling hard in the opposite direction. But this doesn't surprise God, because this has been the history of how people have wandered away from him for a long time in the scriptures and following that. Because there's this generational cycle that happens in people. You see, there's this first generation. They experiences the power and presence of God. And then the next generation assumes the power and presence of God. And then the following generation abandons the power and presence of God. That just as faith can be passed along, also, that's why Moses is giving it such a priority. It's like, if you don't pass along faith, abandonment is sure to follow. And for people in my generation who are stepping into parenting, we have to ask ourselves a question. What are we going to do? How are we going to live lives? How are we going to point our children? What direction are we going to point them into? Are we going to give our lives away that they become the generation that experiences the power and presence of God again in their life? And if we don't make that decision, the culture will make it for us, and it will sweep our kids away. But Moses says there is something that you can do in your house and in your family that's going to anchor your family into things of faith. And it starts in verse 6. And you must commit yourself wholeheartedly to these commands that I'm giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you're on the road and when you go to bed and when you're getting up. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders, and write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And you might hear those stats and it might terrify you, paralyze you, or leave you hopeless. And that wasn't the intent of Moses' warning, or that wasn't the intent of me bringing them up today. It's to make you aware of what you're up against. You see, because the evil one's primary tactic against you and me is to keep you just busy, distracted, and tired, so you can't see the drift that happens in your family. You see, the aim is that we want to point our kids to become fully devoted followers of Christ. So how do we aim that direction? Moses says, it's simple, but it's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. See, the aim is, you have to bring your relationship with God into the everyday life of your family. God's not asking you or me to save our kids. We are completely incapable. Only the Lord saves. But he does call us to integrate, to bring our relationship with him into our lives and into our households. God has called us as parents to cultivate the hearts of our children towards the things of God. And see, how do we do that? And Moses lists all these ordinary moments that we are called to use. When we're at home, when we're on the road, when we're going to bed, when we wake up, bring God into all of these moments. And the last one there, the start of that, Moses says, hey, you need to repeat this over and over again. Moses clearly knew what it was like to have children, because all you do is repeat yourself over and over and over again. You see, what Moses is teaching here in Deuteronomy 6 later became known as a Jewish practice called kavana. And all that kavana is it's the practice of ordinary things with holy intent. And if we could get our minds around this, I think we would be shocked at how it changes our lives. That ordinary things become holy when we move God to the center of them. It changes the way that you'd approach your work on Monday morning. It would change the way that you'd approach your family dinner on Tuesday. And it would change the way that you approach your child whenever you've repeated yourself for the 89th time on Wednesday afternoon. See, because it's this practice of integrating everything to become something that is holy and can be used by God. Earlier this year, our small groups went through a guide that we just called Habits of the Household. These are available, what's left of them, out at Connection Central, and there's also digital copies available online. Because often I just hear from people to say, I want to bring faith into our household, but I have no idea how. And this guide is designed to help you work through 10 different areas in your house that you can begin to incorporate your relationship with God to first yourself, but then also to your family. And often I hear people ask, like, hey, is this guide, is it designed to be something that is only done for people with families? And I say, absolutely not. If you're single or if your kids are in the house, these things are amazing things I'd reference for all of you. Now, there might be some things that don't fit or don't make sense. Like if you're single with a dog, you probably don't need to work through the disciplining your kids practice. I mean, your dog might take to it, I don't know, but I don't think it would ultimately yield much fruit in your life. But a majority of them are designed to be done for everyone and all people. You see, and why we called it the habits of the household is that you and I have habits whether we realize it or not. Because all that habits are consistent, regular things that we engage in over and over again. You have habits that form all of your days. And God has wired us this way. He's made us habitual creatures because that's the way that he has wired us. He said, hey, I want to use that to cultivate a relationship with me. See, because habits are the means that God has given us to integrate our relationship with him into your everyday lives. And these 10 habits are designed to be things that you can do as you go. And the thing is the hope for these is that you start engaging with them the moment that you become a Christian, that you start learning how to incorporate God into your life, into the everyday rhythms of your life. And that'd be the first time I say, hey, when should you start? That day. But you know when the next best day to start is? Today. Today is the next best day to start. And these ordinary habits are God's invitation to you to say, hey, you have as much of God in your life right now as you desire. And that if you make yourself open and available to God and bringing him into your life, you would be shocked at how much more of God is available to you. So what are the habits and how do they work? These habits break down into 3 different sections that I just called moments because habits take place in moments of time. And so there's everyday moments, meaningful moments, and intentional moments. And they're broken up that way just to help you identify places that you can invite God into your life and into your family. Before we get started talking through these, I just want to have a couple rules. First is don't try to do all of these at once. Like sometimes people will be like, man, I'm going to do all 10 tomorrow. And I'm like, no, you will do maybe 2 tomorrow and then you will quit because it was too overwhelming. Start small. Take one thing away that you want to invite, one place that you want to invite God into your life and into your family. Because this is an invitation. And God's inviting you and your family to experience more of him. So first are everyday moments. And they're called everyday moments because they're things that we do every single day. We wake up, we go to bed, and we eat meals. It's part of being human, but they are critical. They are how we start our day. They're how we end our day, and they're the moments when we stop in the presence of others during our day. And in Deuteronomy 6, Moses specifically calls these moments important. Bring God into your every morning. And when you're at home and before you go to bed, and why does Moses start there? Why does he say, hey, you need to bring God into these everyday, ordinary moments? Because our everyday moments help us be present to God and others. All of us are busy. And these ordinary moments, these ordinary habits become anchor points to our lives with God and our lives with others. Amidst the busyness of our days, we can take time to be present with God and others, and we'd be shocked at how our lives would change if the first thing that we did in the morning was, instead of scrolling our phone for 10 minutes, we stopped and prayed for two. Or if we put our phones away at dinner and we're just present to the other people around the table. Or before we went to sleep at night, we stopped and thanked and praised God for his provisions to help us get through the day. You would be shocked at how much your life might change if you began to just give God availability in those everyday moments. You see, because you and I, we miss so much of our lives because we aren't present to it. And the great battleground of our time right now is where we give our attention. We have a glowing rectangle in our pockets that prevents us from being present to God and others. And I truly believe we could change our lives and our families if we took these everyday moments seriously. So the first thing is just focus on the margins. That's what everyday moments do. The first and last 10 minutes of your day and your meals with others. Things that you already do. Because the world is pulling you into a distracted life, and you can't bring God into your everyday life if you're not present with him, and you can't invest into others in your family if you're not present to them. The second set of moments are meaningful ones. I call these the culture or the environment setters of the home. They help us like answer the question, what's it like to live here? What's it like to be a part of the family? Because meaningful moments include things like how we play, what does work look like in the home, discipline, and for some households, the moments of marriage and that relationship. You see, these moments all work together, play and work and discipline in our marriage to build connection and trust for the whole family. Because our meaningful moments help us connect to God and others. We don't have time to talk through each one of these, but I just want to take a look at discipline for a moment because I think it's the greatest example of these moments connect us to God and one another. Here's what the writer of Hebrews says about discipline, God's discipline towards us. My child, don't make light of the Lord's discipline and don't give up when he corrects you. For the Lord disciplines those he loves and he punishes each one he accepts as his child. The Lord loves to discipline those he loves. You know what? I have never once met a parent who goes, you know what my favorite part of parenting is? Discipline. Lord, I pray that I have more opportunities today to discipline my children. Like it is, we feel so close and connected and loved because of the discipline. But in God's eyes, discipline and even punishment, they have a goal. They have a correction to say, hey, I need to make you more and more like Jesus. And they have a motive that which is love. And often when I parent, my discipline is more motivated out of frustration, anger, or annoyance. To say, why are you doing this again? Why right now? I have so many other things that I should be doing. Why can't you just listen to me? And in those times, I often feel like I hear God's voice in the back of my head. Now, in my head, God's kind of sarcastic. But as he's going, hey, Tyler, you're frustrated by your daughter's frustration. I thought she was the four-year-old, not you. You are responding the exact same way that she is. I thought I called you to be the parent, and you are responding in the exact same way because parenting, more than anything else, will teach you your dependence upon God and reveal just how far you have to go. And in those moments of disconnect, in those moments of frustration, God teaches us. God is saying, as you parent your child, I'm going to parent you. Paul David Tripp says it this way, God didn't just send you to do the work in the life of your children. He will use the lives of your children to advance the work in you. Tyler, through your kids, I'm going to help you learn how to parent like I parent, motivated by love instead of frustration. And God uses these moments to help connect me to him and then ultimately extend that grace down to my children. Because God's parenting me as I parent my kids. Because if you're anything like me, you're not gonna get this all right. You're not gonna get it perfect. You're gonna lose your patience. You're gonna miss moments. But that is the amazing news of the gospel. That God redeems our failures and shortcomings. That's the whole entire point of Jesus. That you aren't good enough. And God knew. God knew that you're going to be messy. He knew that you're going to screw up often. He knew your sinful tendencies that were going to show up when you became a parent. And God doesn't look at you and go, oh man, if I would have known If I would have known how much work you were going to be, I would have never sent Jesus for you. Because when Jesus died, all of our sin was future sin. God knew exactly what he was getting into. The gospel makes parenting redeemable, and it gives grace to us as parents because we have the pressure to get it all right, to be good enough. And the pressure is that we feel we have to get it all right, and the gospel gives us the freedom to make it all right. There are moments, these moments in your parenting of discipline are going to be the moments when the gospel becomes real in your home. I heard about the good news of Jesus at church or in God's word, but I felt it and I experienced it in my home. And you know, I think a great way to test, is the gospel real in your home, is just to work through this quick question. When's the last time that you apologized to your kid? When's the last time you apologized to your kid for the way that you didn't handle something correctly? That we as parents have to own when we don't do this right because you aren't going to do it all right. And even in our failures, even when we mess up, even when we screw up and we think we might be screwing up our kids, we can point to the good news of Jesus and the perfect love of our Father. How good is our God in that? And the last set of moments are that of intentional ones. These are moments that you just have to pursue. They're going to be things that require intentional pursuit because they just don't happen. These are things around screen time, family devotions, and intentional conversations. These are moments that if you pursue them, they honestly could have the highest impact in the life of your family. Tech, family devotions, and meaningful conversations, they are used to guide how we invest into our relationship with God and others. You know, I know all the research says that screen time is the number one area of frustration and tension in families. And we could do a whole series on screens and why they matter to our relationship with each other and our relationship to God. But the great concern around screens is not that we have them, but that they might have us. And the emerging data is that screens lessen our enjoyment of life, others, and God, often while demanding more and more of our time and attention. And so we have to be aware of that. They're major challenges for adults and kids alike. I can't tell you how many times I walk into a restaurant and see a table of a family that's sitting together, none of them talking to each other because their worlds are distracted by screens. And if that's you today and you're like, hey, I need help in the world of screens and navigating that as my family, I want to just give you two references here. The first is a website called screensanity.com. Screensanity.com, they do an amazing job of just providing conversations and resources to navigate this new world of screens. They're new, and we're still trying to figure out how do we use them? What does it look like? And they just do a great job of having conversations and giving you resources of ways to navigate that. The second is a book called TechWise Family by Andy Crouch. It provides tons of just grounded biblical wisdom and is a practical guide to, hey, how do I navigate the world of screens through different seasons of life as a family? And I love for Andy, it's not a book that's just a theory, but it's a practice. For him, this is what he did in his family. And actually, his 20-year-old daughter wrote a book with him after she got out of the home about the value of some of these things that they instilled in her thankfulness for the way that her mom and dad headed up those conversations around technology. But to close, I just want to talk through my experience with family devotions in our house. I grew up in just a really ordinary Christian home. My parents, they weren't pastors, they weren't Bible scholars, but my parents did work to try to prioritize a few key spiritual habits. Things like praying together, eating together, and then from time to time, they would often even try to do family devotions. And I remember these moments together that we had, but if I'm being honest with you, I can't remember a single thing that was in one of those devotions. Don't remember a single thing of what we talked about in those times together. But the thing I do remember, the thing that it did teach me, is not that what the information was that it taught me, but what it prioritized to me. This must matter to my parents because they're trying to make it a priority with a 14-year-old that has very little interest. And as parents, I would say we sometimes think that the most important things that we do for our kids are the words that we say, but I argue it's what we prioritize. Because parents will say all sorts of things about what they believe, but what they truly believe will show up in their priorities. And what you prioritize, your family will internalize. So what's the priority? You remember the show Extreme Makeover Home Edition? This show was around in the early 2000s, and I actually think it just got rebooted here in the last few years. But if you're unfamiliar with this show, here's how it would go. They would find a deserving family, and Ty Pennington would show up at this family's house, and he would say, "Hey guys, guess what? We are here to redo your whole entire home. And while we do that, we're going to send you on an awesome vacation." They would load up the whole family into the limousine, send them off to whatever destination that they were being going to. And then this whole crew of people would come in and work to remodel this house. And then right in the middle of the show, Ty would come back on and pretend that he was actually doing something on the house. And then that would be a cut scene to them actually finishing the house. And then as the house gets finished, they pull up this RV and they to hide the house. And they bring the family back in a limousine. And all along the road are their family, their friends, stand-in actors that they're using to create this amazing environment that this family is getting ready to receive this brand new house. And then this family gets out of the limousine and Ty's there standing with them and says, "Hey, Adam's family, are you ready to see your new home?" And they're like, "Yes, of course." And the crowd's going wild. He said, "Well, then you know the words that you have to say." And then them and the crowd behind them would say it together. "Move that bus." And then right as the bus began to move, they'd flip the camera angle. They'd flip it and they would look as the bus moved away, the family would come into view. And they would say, you would get to see mom and dad's face as the bus pulled away and they began to see the new home that was gonna change their lives forever. And mom and dad would begin to cry and the kids would go jump up and down for going crazy. And the dog being excited because everyone else is excited, just running through the yard. And this family has their eyes fixed on this thing that is going to change their life forever. And they are captivated by it. And church, God has given us these everyday, ordinary moments called habits that we can get our eyes up to Jesus. That we can see him for who he truly is and that we can get distracted all the time by things that are going on around us. But these habits, they anchor us in to say, no, we look back up. We look back to Jesus because he is worthy of it all. Yes, sports, they matter. They're good, but Jesus, he's above that. Yeah, grades, they matter, but Jesus, he's above that. Yeah, extracurriculars, they matter, but Jesus, he's above that. And Moses says, as you come and as you go, fix your eyes. As you wake up and as you go to sleep, you fix your eyes. And as you eat and as you leave, you fix your eyes on Jesus because he is the one worthy of all of our love, adoration, and our praise. To love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. Would you all pray with me this morning? God, we love you. And God, we just ask that you just help us to fix our eyes on you. In a world that wants to pull us into distraction, God, we want to be people that are present to you. We want to connect with you and we want to invest into our relationships as a family. We want to see generations of people come to know and love the Lord. And Lord, we need your help. We need your guidance. We need your wisdom. God, will you guide us as we go throughout this week together? And Lord, it's in your Son's precious name that we pray. Amen.